I also am sitting here pondering for you personally, Michael Ann, what would mean more to you at the 100th show, her finally announcing Rep TV or her finally like coming out? Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Hate Spinnerbait, the podcast where we hate spinnerbait, but we love Morris.
We do love Morris. Morris is a whole ass vibe.
He really is. I'm Michael Ann, and with me, as always, is Bethany. Bethany, how are you? Are you excited to hear my Gaylor?
I'm always ready to listen to your Gaylor rants. I'm ready to get onto the Gaylor train. I am a little bit tired, but who isn't? I had a wonderful weekend where I got to see my two nieces perform in their dance recital. Adorable. 10 out of 10 quality. And absolute highlight for me, though, of the recital, besides obviously getting to witness my nieces absolutely slay the game, was this small child in a tap number, and she lost her tap shoe. And it was the cutest little thing. And she just, it went flying. She did kind of like the shocked face and then immediately recovered like a professional, and I was like, that girl is going somewhere, y'all. You heard it here first, that girl is going places. So good on her. Yes, all of like 5 years old for handling it like a pro. But yeah, I'm thriving. I'm ready. All aboard. Choo-choo. Tickets may or may not have been purchased, so hopefully they don't check them, but we're ready to go on the Gaylor train.
Okay, y'all. So I've been kind of like, I haven't been talking a lot about Gaylor on the pod, although I feel that in retrospect, a lot of the TTPD songs are very gay, but that's neither here nor there, because last night, and need I remind you before I even start saying this, it is June, the month of Pride.
Night, baby.
So last night, Taylor Swift sang a mashup of It's Nice to Have a Friend and Dorothea. Why is this significant, you ask? Because during World War II, men would like identify themselves to other gay men by saying that they were friends with Dorothy. So saying I'm friends with Dorothy was a euphemism for being gay when being gay was illegal. This is queer history, people. Yeah.
Queer history.
Queer people know it. Queer people know this. So the fact that she, so before she started singing this mashup, okay, she said, I've never performed this live before. And then she said, and this is crucial, people, I hope I'm doing the right thing. Why would she say, I hope I'm doing the right thing before a mashup that she's done countless times on this tour?
Yeah.
I hope I'm doing the right thing. I'm friends with Dorothea. Okay, bitch. And then
okay,
bitch. After that mashup, she goes on to the piano and she sings a mashup of Exile and Haunted. Why is this significant? Exile, and this is something Gaylors have been pointing out for a really long time. Exile's lyrics are, I gave so many signs so many times.
Yeah.
So it's like, she's like, I've been signaling to y'all for a while now. And Haunted, like, she is now at this stage in her career, especially if you look at the lyrics of TTPD, she's like more haunted by her queerness now. Like, she maybe in the past was like okay with it being a secret, but now she's an adult, she's 34, and she's like, this has been haunting me, I just want to release it. So that being said, next week starts the London show, one of the London shows. It is the 100th show.
Yes,
it is on June 13th. And in an interview months and months ago, Travis said in an interview that the London shows were the shows you're going to want to see.
Yeah.
So I'm just saying, you know, we could be getting like a Reputation announcement, or maybe Gaylors will finally feel vindicated.
We'll finally know peace.
But I feel like singing I've got a friend in me. imagine.
But also, why am I into that?
Imagine. it's nice to have a friend in Dorothea, like, basically. Like, because do those songs even correlate to each
it's
other?
It's a weird, it's lyrics? A little bit of a weird mashup. It's not two songs that I think would go together.
And yet, here we are. And then followed up with Exile. Like, I feel like that was an ultimate signal. I feel like that was her being like, yeah, guys, I'm friends with Dorothy. This is not her first reference to being friends with Dorothy as well. She's in a Dorothy outfit in the Bejeweled music video,
I do think it's interesting that people will often, I mean, I know obviously the joke since the song Mastermind has come out, like every time she does something, people are like, she's a mastermind. But then those same people, like when she does very queer-coded things, or like, no, it's just a coincidence. And it's like, which one is it? Is she a mastermind? Is she always dropping Easter eggs? Is she always like thinking of things and articulating things or whatever? Or is it just, you know, like you can't have it both ways. You know what I mean? Like the door swings both ways is all I'm saying.
Mm-hmm. Okay, here's the video.
I believe there is something deeper to this one scene in the Karma music.
Karma. It was Karma.
Okay. I was like, I'm kind of bejeweled. I can't think of it, but then.
Which is very interesting, actually. That video also had a lot of Easter eggs. Yeah. And. Oh, my little Gaylor brain is just, like, really going somewhere right now. Like, she had, like, orange is obviously the color everybody represents with the last album, Karma. Yeah. She wore a full orange outfit for the 1989 set. That's the only time she ever wore anything matched. It was on some significant date that I can't remember. And, oh, my God, y'all. This will be the rest of my night. So I'll check back in with you guys.
I'm sure we'll hop back on the train. But yes, I suppose we have waffled on long enough. That's a great phrase, and I really feel like as Americans we should use that more. We should utilize that
phrase.
I
really like that phrase, yes.
But yes, we've waffled on long enough about thank you for entertaining us as we again, this is usually a chaos thing, but the direct quote from Michael Ann today was, it is pivotal. And I said, yes, we will go ahead and do it. Pivotal. And we'll do it on a Tuesday because it was pivotal. It was topical. It was something that needed to be brought up ASAP. So now that we've gotten that out of our system, we will now move into Destin Land. We'll talk about the moon and more. Chapters 2 and 3 today. Chapter 1, since we now just like recap the last chapter, which was only one of them. Basically, we met our main protagonist. She works for her family's realty company, which rents out like beach houses to people over the summer. Her sister just graduated hospitality school, so she thinks that she is the creme de la creme, cat's meow of hospitality now, and has brand taking instead of groundbreaking, because apparently that's where my mind's at. So anyways, absolutely groundbreaking ideas, or whatever I was going to say. I don't know anymore, y'all. I apologize. And, of course, she doesn't. But anywho, so VIPs, the VIPs, as Grandma is calling them. She goes to deliver some cheese and fruit platters to them, where she meets this really stuck-up Karen-esque character and this mysterious guy. And she lives in Colby. She's been dating her boyfriend pretty much her entire high school experience. And that's pretty much it. Has two sisters. Yeah. All right. That sums it up.
And we're caught up.
And we're caught up. That's what you missed on Glee. Chapter 2.
I absolutely died. I had to read it like 3 times. At the beginning of chapter 2, when Amber's like, so I'm like, I understand you want to look like a model. I want to win the lottery so I don't have to do this job. Let's both lower our expectations. okay? I'm like, that is the fucking funniest thing. That is like what every... That's like a customer service dream moment right there, to be like, let's lower our expectations because it's not what you're going to get. I was dying. And her mom's like, I hope you really didn't say that. And she didn't actually say it. But I wish that she did, because that is so funny.
It's so funny. Amber, I barely know her, but I feel like it's what she deserves to get to say to someone.
Yes, Amber's so far iconic.
She really is.
But yes, when she gets home, her sister Amber and her mom are in her bed, Emmeline's bed, like watching TV and eating nuts. And Emmeline is pissed because she's like, you're not allowed to be in my room. You're making everything messy. She's obviously like very type A, very organized, very clean. So she's like, get out of my room, please. And they're like, oh, but you know, like dad's doing construction on the house again. So like, there's nowhere else to go. Like, this is the only place we can go. And she's like, Emmeline's like calling them out. Like, that has nothing to do with me. And that's like not true. So get out of here. So Amber leaves and mom is like, you're in a mood. And Emmeline's like, yes, well, I work customer service. So
can you blame me?
Yeah, literally. They talk about the engagement party. And then we find out a little bit about her mom. Like, we find out that her mom got pregnant with her when she was in 17. So she's like very serious about what she wants to see Emmeline's life like. Like, she doesn't want Emmeline to have the same kind of situation she did. So when Emmeline is joking about getting engaged, she's like, this isn't funny. Like, please tell me this is a joke. Like, don't be serious. And she is trying to joke around with her, but her mom's like, hell no. And her mom says, you know, I only get upset because I want you to have everything I didn't. And Emmeline says, the moon and more.
Early title drop here, page 21. And from our main girl, we get the title drop.
Yeah, we don't usually get a title drop from the main character, I feel like.
Yeah, very rarely. So this one's kind of shocking. Our stats and our info gal is catching up, so we can start shouting out to her to get us information on how many times the main character said it, because rarely. But
she was so rude, Cece, and had to like work her job. Like, what the fuck?
She have a life outside of listening to this podcast. It's uncalled for.
Furious with you. Quit your job. Only listen to us. Just kidding. Obviously,
we'll pay your bills, except we can't because we're poor.
We can barely pay our own, actually. Yes. So,
but when Dr. Pepper sponsors us,
when Dr. Pepper sponsors us, I'll hire CC to do data collection for us.
Yeah, be like, full time data collection, please and thank you.
And she'll be like, no, thank you, I have a job. Anyway, moving on.
Yeah, pretty much. Yes. Anyways, moving on. So yeah, it comes from a story that they used to read, which I love that Sarah Dessen just makes like a little. It's definitely giving me, what is that? Like, I'll love you always or whatever kind of vibes. Yeah. It's giving me like that kind of vibes, but she like made her own. And I love that this like little children's story she made in a couple of sentences here in this chapter is like honestly adorable. And I'm like, I would read this book.
Yes.
I'm like, this children's book sounds so good. So Sarah, yet another quality you're good at. You could also write some really sweet children's books. But yes, it kind of gives that vibe. You know, it says, whatever you need, I'll find a way to get it to you. I will give you the moon and more. And I'm getting a little bit ahead of myself because we haven't heard too much about her dad. But her father, I should say, because she kind of makes the distinction that a dad and a father are two very different things. Yeah. But also very true. Very true. But I'm getting a little bit ahead of myself. But I just have to say this. This is 100% giving Gilmore Girls vibes, right?
Yes.
Like, 100%, because as I was reading this, I was like, Gilmore Girls.
Yes, yes.
And I say that with love. And like, I love it, and yes. And also, like, again, getting ahead of myself, these parents might be my favorite Dessen parents so far.
Yes.
Like, I feel like they are probably the best, right? Like,
yeah.
I was like, okay. Which, like, last book we had a good dad. Like, I liked Gus. Even though he wasn't perfect, I thought he was a good dad. But to have like a dad and a mom that so far I like both of them, I'm like, what is happening here? So yeah, just kudos to mom and dad is all I'm gonna say.
I wonder how old Sarah Dessen's daughter was when this book came out.
Yeah, that's a good question, because this is 2011?
2013.
2013? I don't know, I just said 2011. We literally did a whole time travel episode about when this, but oh my god.
Which book came out when she got pregnant?
So she was writing, was it Along for the Ride? Or she had just had her when Along for the Ride came out?
Yeah, yeah. Okay, yeah. I think she just had her when Along for the Ride came out, and she was writing it She was writing her baby. She was growing her child in her uterus while she was writing Lock and Key.
Yes, that's what it is. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So when did Along for the Ride come out?
2009, I believe. I have to double check that.
So she's only four. But maybe like...
Yeah, so she's pretty young. Oh,
welcome home, Willow.
Yeah, 2009 is when Along for the Ride came out.
Yes. Okay. So she is like in this new stage of parenting as well, where she, her like kids growing up, 4 years old, they are talking by then, you know.
Yeah.
So things are different. So maybe she has like kind of like a different, I don't know, view, but I love it.
Also, I have never felt so old as when the Sarah Dessen mom in this novel is 36. And yes, I know that she obviously had her when she was a teenager, but still I was like, oh, 36.
I know.
Okay, me and the mom are closer in age than I am with the protagonist. I'm just going to go curl up in a ball now.
Yep. Yep. I was like, wow. You know, you always think like, oh, I'm still like 22, 23.
Yeah.
And then there's just these things that like smack you in the face and you're like, holy shit, I'm in my 30s. I'm well into my 30s at this point.
Into my 30s. This is one of those moments. I was like, ah. Yeah. So yeah, so she is 36. This is where we found out that her father has called, because she sees a little note about it. It says, your father called. And she, of course, just had this whole conversation with her mom. So she's like, what the hey, I just saw you and you didn't tell me. And she was like, oh, well, you know, I was going to tell you, but see, I wrote the note and then I threw away the note because I figured I would talk to you. And but then it just slipped my mind. And you're like, okay, what's going on with that? Oh, so she knows her mom apologizes or whatever. And you're like, okay, there's definitely more to the story. Like, her mom is being weird about the fact that her father called. And so she's like, crap, it's 6:40. I have to go. She's already late for like the fifth engagement party that her boyfriend's sister is having. So she's like, I don't have time to call like my father right now. Like, we'll have to get back with that, you know, later. And this is where she has a whole, this is where we kind of learn the backstory. So she says, there's a difference between the words father and dad, and it's more than three letters. Fucking fantastic. Right? Fucking fantastic. Those two sentences, may I just say. Miss Dessen, you've done it again. So she explains that up until the age of 10, she didn't know this, but she ended up getting this, like, family tree project. And so she goes ahead and asks because she realizes that she obviously is aware of the fact that her dad is not her biological dad, so she wants to know, like, the genetic details of her family. So she asked her mom about who her father was, who, of course, she doesn't have a relationship with. This is where we learn that her mom and her father met when she was 17, and he was originally from Connecticut. He was headed off to college in the fall. They had, like, a, you know, but daddy, I love him, summer romance kind of situation when he came down to North Redomain, which, of course, we know about from our friends in What Happened to Goodbye. And I almost, like, twisted my words there, too. I was like, what happened to Goodbye? It's the name of that story. So we know about North Redomain from that, which we know is, like, close to Colby. She says it couldn't be more different. Like, he was, you know, wealthy, and mom was from Colby, and of course, as we know, her family business is this realty business, which she said, like, basically, you know, it's never been like super super successful. It's very seasonal work, obviously. And she says, you know, that they, like, he's this mouthy northerner, and it wasn't just a hookup, though. Like, they definitely had, like, a whole, like I said, but daddy I love him kind of star-crossed lovers summer romance. And then, of course, at the end of that summer, mom misses a period. Mm-hmm. And dun, dun, dun. She says suddenly it was no longer a romance or even a relationship, but a crisis.
This scene right here is literally that episode of Gilmore Girls when they flashback. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I was like, This is Gilmore Girls.
This is Gilmore Girls.
And it got me so hyped. I was like, oh my God. Yeah. Like, yeah. 100%. So she talks about how first part of the pregnancy, they remain in contact. But as the months pass, they kind of end up drifting apart. He doesn't end up meeting her until she's like 6 weeks old. Like, he's put down as her father on the birth certificate, but he comes when they're like 6 weeks old. And of course, again, like, he's from money. He's off in college now. So it's like he goes and gets to like have his life. And small town mom, like, is the one who's responsible and actually like has to like, you know, have this child. But she does say like, yeah, there were discussions from, it sounds like on both sides who did not want this pregnancy to happen. To carry on, but in the end her mom made the decision to keep her and to have her. And yeah, dad just kind of gets to go off. She says that she has to get child support from him from that like visit that they had, but basically like that's all the contact that she gets from him until she is 10 and reaches out to him for this project. In the meantime, we kind of get to hear about how she meets her dad. And she says actually that they were set up. He's a widower with two small girls of his own. They were, I believe, 6 and 4 at the time, which, like, that's sad. And they actually didn't hit it off right away. They were, like, set up on a blind date, and they were like, no, wait, this isn't. But then a few months later, her car breaks down, and who's the one that comes to her rescue? Her dad. And then before you know it, they're a little family. So yeah, she says she was 2, Amber 4, Margot 6. So obviously, like, for all intents and purposes, this is the only family she's known. Like, they've always, that's always been her sisters. That's always been her dad. And it sounds like dad really is into construction. But it seems like he's a great guy overall. Kind of always, it seems like, in flux doing things in their house. But it sounds like a really good dad. And again, her sisters are a little chaotic and whatnot, but it sounds like they have like a nice good family unit going on. But yeah, she reaches out to dad. Mom's kind of like, don't get your hopes up, like, he's kind of notorious for letting people down. And she actually does get a response from him. She says, no more Loch Ness, he was real. So he says, you know, thank you so much for reaching out. You know, I think about you all the time, and I never thought it was the right place to reach out to you. I would love to answer the questions for your project. But he's like, you know, I know I can never expect to be your father, but it's my hope that maybe someday we might be friends. And so, yeah, she gets everything she needs for the project. She finds out that he has been, he's married to this wonderful woman named Leah. She actually has a half-brother, apparently. And that they do end up, she ends up doing really well on her project. She kind of lets him know that. And then that kind of opens up this communication with them via email, which it sounds like they mostly kind of discuss stuff like school, mostly. And then he lets her know that they're actually coming down to North Bredemain, his wife and his son, and he would like to meet up with her if that would be okay. Again, it sounds like her mom is a little like, don't get your hopes up. Like, I don't know about this, but if it's something you want to do, like, who am I to tell you no? So they all go. They all meet up for kind of an awkward lunch, but it sounds like overall it goes pretty well. And this is where he gives her a copy of The Adventures of Huckleberry Finn. And he says, like, you may not like it, which is fine. Just try it and see. And she, again, he's like so Christopher.
He is.
So Christopher. So anyway, so she heads home. And it's like, so, you know, that's that. So she ends up reading the book and reaches out to him and is like, yeah, didn't really love it. And she kind of expects, like, maybe that'll be the end of their communication because he, like, tried to give her this thing. And then she kind of, you know, rebuffed it and was like, didn't love that, Dad. And no, he responds back and he's like, what else did you think? And she's like, as it turns out, like, that lunch ended up being, like, the beginning of, you know, kind of a relationship. Like, it wasn't, like, a big, beautiful thing. It wasn't a wonderful reunion where we were suddenly besties. But we emailed regularly. And, again, it sounds like mostly talks about, she says, studying and reading. And then once a summer, they came down to North Redmond, and she would go meet up with them. So she has a relationship. She gets Christmas gifts that she knows is pretty much, you know, wrapped and picked out by his wife. She gets birthday cards. They email back and forth, and then she says, the summer she turned 16, something changed. Began with a simple comment, lobbed across the table as we sat at Igor's, the lone Italian place in town. And I was like, is that where they're going along for the ride that actually has tablecloths? Because I don't think it's ever named. Do we now know its name?
I think we do.
This is important to me. I like that our dad said it's for when you can't eat seafood one more time, which, yeah. And so this is where the whole college thing comes up, and he's like, what are your plans, what are you gonna do, because I'm from a wealthy family and we go to wealthy people's schools, and what's your plan? And she's like, I'm from Colby and my parents are not wealthy. She's like, I don't know, like zero people have gone to college, like I'm probably go somewhere, who knows. And so he's all like, challenge yourself and like you deserve the best. And so he starts sending her like, you know, SAT practice books and how to write the best college essay books and all that kind of stuff, which is helpful, and basically tells her, like, don't worry about the cost. If you want to go to an Ivy League school, I got you, girl. And again, mom is like, I don't know about all of this. And she's like, when I knew Joel, he was a big talker, but not so big on delivering. And again, Emmeline, kind of trying to give him the benefit of the doubt, is like, he was my age then. Would you want to be judged based on how you were at 18? And this is my favorite line of yes. mom so far. I was like, mic drop moment. I love this mom. Where she says, I didn't really have a choice, she said. I had a child. And it's like, yep, exactly. She is kind of judged at what she did on 18 for the rest of her life.
Yep.
And you are the proof of that. And again, obviously, she's not mad at her decision. But again, he got to go, our boy Joel here got to go, like, have that Ivy League college experience. And he got to go, like, make a life for himself. And he got to get married and have a kid on his terms. And Emmeline's mom just had a kid. And, like, that was her life. So,
yes. Yep. It's one of those moments where you're like, oh, yes, the only person responsible for children are women. The only people responsible mm-hmm. for children are women.
Yep.
Pretty.
So, again, there really isn't two people whose lives are changed in teen pregnancy. It's pretty much always one.
Yes.
And really in any childbearing things. And it's an unfair, unjust world that we live in. And I wish we were all Sweden, where we force both parents to take some time off to raise their child that they had equal
right.
say and decision in having. Right. But alas, not the case. But yes, I was like, oh my God, a mic drop moment. I love that. So yeah, so here again, Emmeline's like kind of, you know, feeling bad because she's like, my mom made sure, like, on every level that I didn't have the same experience that she had. And so, you know, she hears her mom and her grandma having like hushed conversations behind closed doors about it. And her grandma's like, Jesus Christ, you did everything in raising this kid. If this is the one thing he wants to do is give her money for college, like, let him. Like, he owes her that, you know? And she's like, I don't want to owe anyone anything. And also, like, I don't think he's going to deliver on this. So, like, I don't want her to get her hopes up about this. So she does. She gets her hopes up and she goes ahead and applies to Columbia as her number one. And she gets in. Yay! Except not yay, because she messages her dad or her father and she's like, great news. You know, like she just writes, she says, I got in. So he responds, great news. Congratulations. Which is like a little like that. She was expecting a little more. Like, he had been like prepping on this, sending her things, convincing her to do it, and that's the response she gets. So she's like, okay. So she's like, all right, like, you know, no worries, I'm not gonna think about it too much. She does go ahead though and be like, hey, like, you know, here's some financial things, some mission stuff we need to work out. She doesn't get a response for a hot minute. She finally does, and it's to say, I'm so sorry to have to tell you this, but due to unforeseen circumstances, I'll not be able to supplement your tuition to Columbia. It was always my hope and intention to help you, but some things have occurred that make it impossible. I hope you understand. And at first she's like, supplement? Bitch, you told me mm-hmm. you were paying for it, and now it's supplement, and now you can't give me anything for college when you're the one who like got my hopes up about this? So, yeah, her hopes and dreams of Columbia are basically shot. And she says her dad is kind of like Bigfoot / the Loch Ness monster all over again. Like, he's being really weird. She tries to invite him to her graduation, and she is just ghosted by him. Like, he is not responding. Mm-hmm. He sends that thing about, like, hey, I can't help you pay for Columbia, and she doesn't get anything. She decides she will go to the ECU, which she applied for as, like, a backup school. She is able to get a full ride there. So that's basically the decision. Her mom and her dad are like, yeah, sorry, like we can't help you pay for Columbia. It's past the point of financial aid. And so she's like, okay, well, decision made. I will go to the stew then, obviously.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. I was like really rooting for this dad. I was like, okay, well, he's sending her a bunch of stuff. Like, he's very actively involved in her getting into college, and he's rich and cares about his image. So, like, you know, but no, he just, he does exactly what the mom said he was going to do and bails. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, that really sucks. That's really shitty to do to your kid. Mm-hmm. Like, anyway. Yeah, so she decides she's going to Eastview with a full ride, which I love. And
love that for you, girl.
Love that. A full ride? I wish.
I want to know what Eastview is now. I feel like this is the first time in this book that it's really been brought up. We've had DeFreeze. We've had the U. So I'm like, what is Eastview? One of the coastal colleges that are part of the University of North Carolina branch?
I would say,
I was like, could it be UNC Wilmington? In my mind, it's UNC Wilmington because I love Wilmington and I love UNC Wilmington. Fun fact, UNC Wilmington is where they filmed Capeside High School in Dawson's Creek for any of you who are not in the know. Yes. So the more you know. But yes. Yeah, so in my mind, that's what it is. It probably isn't in Sarah Dessen's mind, but I'll ask her one day.
We can ask her. You can message her on Instagram right now.
I'll ask her right now and be like, in your mind, what is the Eastview? And see what she tells me.
But yeah, she was like, you know what? It doesn't even really matter that I'm not going. Like, I got in. I'm just a gal from Colby High, and I got into an Ivy League. That's huge. But she says, but life went on, and the one person who knew that best of all always hadn't gone anywhere. She was always bragging, telling anyone who would listen about my full scholarship to a great school, squeezing my shoulder as she passed by me as I sat on the couch watching TV, smiling from across the dinner table when Amber said something typically ridiculous, stopping outside my closed bedroom door for only a moment, yet always just long enough so I knew for sure she was there.
Mom. We love this mom. This mom is the best Destin mom ever. It's finally happened.
Yes. Like, that is what a mom is. It's just beautiful. Yes. Beautiful. Oh, God. I love their relationship already. And I love
that, again, like, in Emmeline's mind, because her father kind of poisoned her into thinking, like, if she didn't go to Ivy League, she'd be, like, wasting her potential or whatever. And I love that her mom is, like, very proud of her for getting a full ride to this. Because, again, like, any of the University of North Carolina schools are great schools. And the fact that, you know, like, she got in there and got a full ride, like, and her mom's bragging about that. I'm like, yes, you should. Like, I feel like her accomplishment has been a little derailed, you know what I mean? Because she, like, can't go to her dream school. And like she said, like, the fact that she got in is a massive accomplishment. Like, the acceptance rate at somewhere like a Columbia is, you know, like, near zero. So that's super impressive. And the fact that she got offered a full ride at a school, like, you know, if this was to be, like, UNCW is a big deal. So... Yes, mom. Brag about your girl.
Yes. She deserves it. I love that. I love that. Yes. So chapter 3 begins with her at this freaking engagement party. Everyone's like obsessed. Her and Luke have this cute little banter where he's like, I have to wear tails. And then they kind of make fun of like all the high end people who come to Colby to get for destination wedding and then complain endlessly about their caterers and vendors, hopelessly backwards compared to wherever they came from. And then they kind of bring up other weddings they saw, like bridesmaids wearing flip-flops and carrying a single sunflower, blah, blah, blah. And he's like, you joke, but they're talking about releasing butterflies. Like, this wedding is going to be freaking nuts. So here we get, like, some nicknames here for Luke that I see kind of are, like, going on. So she says, really, it was kind of fun to see Luke bent out of shape. Oh my god, his name is Luke. You gotta be fucking kidding me.
I know.
spend enough time, like 3 years of your life, with Mr. Easygoing. So right here, she's like calling him Mr. Easygoing. Like, he's very laid back. He's very chill. He doesn't get stressed. Like, she is kind of the, like, high-strung one who's, like, you know, getting good grades and being a perfectionist and everything. And he's just kind of like, yeah, man, I'm a white man.
Life's good for me.
then they like smooch because they seem to be happy. Like she doesn't really, yeah. I mean, she is dropping these like mysteries and going, and then down here she says Mr. Accommodating. And I don't know if that's like her being like, this is my man. He's easygoing and accommodating. Or if she's like, oh my right. God, he's so accommodating and so annoying.
Right.
Like he if lets she's people like, walk all over him. He's a pathological
people pleaser.
Exactly. Exactly. But somebody, when they're kissing, somebody's like, I think I know who's next, which is such a fucking weird thing to say to teenagers, but
and
whatever.
And people do, though, which is so weird.
It's so weird. You should not be encouraging teenagers to marry each other. Anyway, yeah. So Luke is like, look at that. Engagements are contagious. And she said,
this is my favorite.
So is the plague.
And I was like, yes. Yes. Mm-hmm. I'm like, she gets some of her mic drop moments from her mama. And I respect that.
Yes. I loved that. Hilarious. So Luke gets sent out to get ice. And Emmeline is going to help the caterers. And I was really fingers crossed hoping that we were going to get a Wish catering shout out here. But we did not.
And I was like, well, it is a little far out for them because they're in Lakeview. So I doubt. But I was like, maybe one of them has opened up a new subset of Wish in right. Colby. Like maybe Christy. Or I wouldn't it be the funniest thing if it was Monica of all people?
I would love that.
But sadly, no. And actually, like Monica's like runs really smoothly. There's never chaos. It's just like cool, calm, collected.
Yes, that would be amazing. Oh my God, that'd be so funny. But this is where we meet Morris, our friend. So this is her best friend. He's been best friends with her for many years, but he is like
hot mess express.
A hot mess express. Like I'm like trying, I was like, how do I describe him without saying he's like shaggy do? So
put an apt description in fairness.
Yes. So she's like not really doing anything. The caterers are kind of, you know, drowning. So she starts helping and she's like, Morris, can you like pick up the fucking pace? Can you like actually do something? What are you doing? You're just standing there doing nothing. And we find out that she, Emmeline, has been kind of like helping him through life since they became friends because he kind of has it rough. He doesn't have like any drive at all. So she like keeps getting him jobs. She keeps sticking her neck out for him, and like it's not really paying off honestly because he's not good at existing. So yes, like right here, she's the owner of the thing, is of the catering company, is like, did you unload those napkins and plates from the van? And he's like, uh-huh. And she was like, where are they? And he was like, you didn't tell me where to put them. And they're just on the ground next to the van. It's like, wait, what is happening here, man? Like, what is happening here? What is
happening
here?
Everything has to be, like, really spelled out for him.
Yes.
Which, honestly, is kind of like talking to my husband sometimes, where I'm like, I thought you would have, like, filled in the gaps, like, read between the lines of what else I needed from you there. But, like, I really had to, like, step-by-step instruction that, apparently.
Yeah, I know. Sometimes it's like, okay, well, it's like, I'm like, okay, let's do the floors. And he's like, okay, I did the floors. And I'm like, it's only been 10 minutes. He's like, oh, yeah, I swept. No.
That's
doing
not,
the floors
that's
is
not
like
what I meant.
A four-step process. Okay?
Yeah.
Sir? Anyway. But, yeah, they're, like, kind of talking about how Morris is worthless and whatever. But she says about Morris, she says, the best thing I could figure is that I never got to have a puppy. And being friends with Morris was kind of, like, the same thing. He could be cute and fun, but also at any moment ruin your favorite shoes and pee all over your floor, so to speak. I love that comparison. Gwen goes along the line of Shaggy Doo, because, you know, Shaggy Doo, Scooby Doo, you know. I like it.
He's just saying.
Just saying. We got a Scooby Doo reference going in here. Yeah, last summer she got Morris a job with her dad, and even though he was terrible at it and her dad complained every single night, her dad just didn't fire him, just wouldn't fire him, kept making up excuses, which I love.
I love this, honestly, yeah. I love that her dad, like, seems like he can't stand him, but he's also like, I'm gonna keep him. Like,
yeah.
Well, but it would take a lot after a new person, and it's like, you secretly, like, you secretly like having him around.
Yeah, you're doing the same thing she's doing.
Mm-hmm.
But Yeah, hilarious. Like, Morris is, like, costing the company money, but... Yeah, he never let him go, and then he kind of had him do odd jobs even after the summer was over. So then she looks over at Morris, and he's putting forks in a basket one at a time. And she's like, Morris, please dump them in the box. And he's like, what? And she's like, just forget it. So then Luke pulls up with the ice. Morris is calling her out. He's like, you don't seem okay. Like, are you, what's going on? Like, you're weird. You're behaving strangely. Like, and it's interesting that Luke didn't notice this, but anyway.
Good point.
So she tells Morris, like, my father called today. And Morris is like, oh, well, maybe he has a graduation present for you. And she's like, kind of late, don't you think? And he's like, better late than never. And she says, this, ladies and gentlemen, was basically Morris's mantra. But that was the weird thing. I could handle him being a slack because, well, it was just how he was. I expected more from everyone else, especially my father. Yes, as you should.
Yeah, in fairness.
Oh, yeah, this is where she talks about inviting him to graduation, but he never responded. And now she's, like, going back thinking about how he wants him, how he called and wants her to call him. And it's kind of all she's thinking about. Although she says, all through dinner, I sat with Luke's arm loosely around my shoulders, trying not to track Morris's work or lack of it from a distance. You know who Luke is like in this Gilmore Girls mirror image? He is Dean.
Dean? I was going to say, is he Dean? Because he is Dean. Like, ooh, Theo is Jess. Theo is so yes! Jess. Like, he's like the bad boy from up, like, from out of town, up north, from New York. Like, oh my God. And he's the challenger. And there's something wrong with Dean. Dean is a great, like, guy. Like,
no.
But.
No. Season one Dean, season one Dean is good, but like every season after that, it's like he's like borderline emotionally manipulative. But anyway, continue.
Yeah, Jess is obviously the better pick of guy. Like,
obviously,
you know, you're like, Rory, I understand you don't really understand her plight and why she's so torn between them, but you try to understand why she is. Yeah, like, there's nothing wrong with Luke. Luke seems fine. Like, he seems nice. But, like, Theo could challenge her and, like, could get her in a way and could just be, like, kind of a smartass and read a lot of books, and it's hot.
Yeah, she says she could understand her mother's first instinct now to toss the note away. Fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, I was just a fool. And she's like, this is who I am. I'm going to the U. This is where I'm from. Like, why would you change any of that? Or what could he possibly say to change any of that now? And then she drives home thinking about this call the whole time. And the next day was Sunday.
Checkout day. Checkout day. Also, since we're just doing No More Girls comparisons, why do I feel like Morris is like Kirk?
Yes! Morris is Kirk! But like better than Kirk. Not better than Kirk, but like just more
good at like
communicating.
Good at communicating, good at understanding like people's emotions, I guess. Yes. Like clearly he can read Emily and be like, hey, you're acting weird, what's wrong with like Kirk could not do that.
No.
That is not something Kirk could do.
Kirk cannot read a room.
No, he cannot.
But yeah. It's Sunday, baby.
Clean out day. 6 hours to make houses fully used by folks on vacation appear pristine and untouched. Which grandma doesn't really check or trust that some of these people, they use like subcontractors, and she doesn't trust that these people can necessarily do it, which is why she has to go behind them. She runs into one of them, which did you pronounce this Lolly or Lolly?
Lolly.
Lolly, like lollipop. Yeah, that's how I pronounced it. And then I went to go read it out loud, and I was like, maybe I'm wrong, because I've been wrong before about names. So should we meet one of them, our girl Lolly here. And I love this exchange, because it is just like, we've all worked with that person where you're like, oh man, I've engaged in this conversation, and now I'm going to have to, like, find a way to awkwardly get out of it. So, you know, it seems like she's good. She always has something going on. Like, going to need surgery. You ever had an MRI? And just, like, honey, and she's like, oh, okay. We are in this conversation now. So anyways, Janice, who she works with, is up there and they're, you know, finishing up. And she's like, catch you later at the tidal wave. And so Emily's like, uh-huh, yeah. And then she kind of goes to head out. She sees this guy, a tall guy with glasses, jogging, wearing an iPod. He looks familiar, but no name came to mind. So she went back to what she was doing. Just then he calls out to her. So she's like, he is like, you're from the reality place, right? And that's when it dawns on her, like, that's who it is. She's like, oh, it's the Vips. And he's like, you told us about the table place when you brought the one and the cheese. And she's like, oh, yeah, right. That was me. So he's like, Theo, you know, like, I forgot your name. And so she's like, I was pretty sure, honestly, we hadn't gotten to that part last time. We hadn't gotten to those pleasantries. So she introduces herself. And this is when he's like, so this is where you live? And she looks at this house and she's like, I glanced at Summer Daydream, which was an 8-bedroom, 10-bath, 4-story monstrosity sporting a pool and triple garage. No. Just working. She's like, in a war world, man, do you think I live here? Okay. And so he's like, oh, on a Sunday? And she's like, the rental industry never sleeps. Yeah, like, this is a big checkout day. Like, I gotta work. So he's like, oh, okay. So basically he apologizes. We find out that New York lady is his boss. And he's like, you know, she's kind of intense. She doesn't need to be rude. And Emily's not buying it. She's like, no, because she got to get with like a bitch. And she like threw her phone across the room. Crazy lady. And he's like, okay, maybe she does. But it's kind of a New York reflex. Not entirely her fault. So she's like, it's fine. I'm used to it. Which, again, customer service. We all are.
Yep.
So he's like, oh, she's just really stressed because we're working on this project. And she's just like really worried about editing and filming. And so Emily's like, oh, she makes movies. This is where I find out that they're in town to film a documentary. And when I tell you all, for a brief, brief moment in time, I thought here we are in Colby. This was The Moon and More. There was a book called Keeping the Moon that had two different artists in it. One was very, two, both of them were very eccentric. One of them being freaking Mira, was wishing it would be Mira. One of them being Norman. I was like, it's going to be one of them. And it's Clyde. And like, Clyde is cool. And we love Clyde. And he is mysterious. And he has a weird laundromat pie place or whatever. But I was like, oh, not who I was thinking it would be.
Yeah, I was really hoping for Norm. I was like, it's going to be Norm. But it's like, I don't know, maybe she doesn't reference, maybe she has like a timeline, like a breaking cutoff point for when she stops referencing books.
And maybe Keeping the Moon is just too far out of reach now, but it would have been great.
It would have been great.
Yeah, it's our guy Claude. And I just called him Claude. Claude. I told you I pronounce names. I actually know that his name is not Claude. And yet I just went Claude. It's our guy, Clyde. Clyde's, you know, the bike guy, obviously. And like I said, all those other things. We know him from Along for the Ride. He does seem like a man of mystery. I'm excited to know a little bit more about him. Emmeline, on the other hand, is like, like that guy, like, again, everyone in Colby is like not impressed by anyone in Colby, you know, because they all know they're all in each other's business. And she's like, he's like the bike shop owner, like, I don't know, whatever. And so he's like, oh, he's this real like eccentric artist. And he's like, we should interview you. I'm going to talk to Ivy. And that's what crazy Karen's lady is. And she's like, oh, like, I don't know anything about him, you know, like, thanks, whatever. And so he's like, oh, you know, nice talking to you. And she's like, you too. And so she basically, you know, heads around or whatever. And she's like, what kind of person would think a girl like me would live in a house like that? The same kind of guy who thought there'd be interest in a movie about Clyde Conway. In other words, not from around here. So there you go. Our Jess has entered the picture.
Jess has entered the chat.
What's going to be your sitch? And she's going to be like, oh, Dean isn't really that great. I hope she never at any point gets involved with a Logan. That is my prayer for you, Emily. That is my prayer for you. Yes.
Fingers crossed, never get a Logan. He may be never rich. Get a Logan. He may buy you $75,000 Birkin bags, but
he may have like a cute nickname for you and look really cute, but let me tell you. He ain't shit. Yeah. No.
You can't trust adult blonde men.
It's true. It's very true.
Also, I need to tell you that we watched Project Runway last night, obviously, and the challenge was designing a look based on an American Girl doll.
The yep. world's colliding.
Matt, yep. I need to find this episode now. I think I need to watch this episode.
It's good. It's good.
I also went to a food park this weekend, and it was very lovely. It's back in Gainesville, and it was very hip. My parents were the ones who showed it to me. My dad was like, "You didn't know that your parents were this hip," and I was like, "No," and I was like, "This is a place that Katie would go to." So I did have to send her a picture and be like, "Hey, if you're ever in Gainesville, this is the place you're gonna want to eat." So. Yes, food halls and American Girl dolls are with us always.
And the Vassa Piglet, of course.
The Vassa Piglet. Obviously the Vassa Piglet.
Obviously.
So yes, that is chapters 2 and 3. We will be back on Thursday for Chaos Thursday, where we are watching the fan-voted Cadet Kelly. Let me tell you how serious I took this poll. I could have voted on it, obviously, because I have Instagram. And yet I was like, no, I don't want to sway the vote in any which way. I will let the people speak. I was like, I can't cast a vote. So I waited. I did not cast a vote. I waited until Michael had told me when the poll was over what we'd be watching. And I'm excited. I think y'all picked a good one. So we'll be discussing that. And then obviously next Tuesday back with the next two chapters. And next Thursday, no chaos, because happy anniversary. Hashtag Michael Landry forever. So we're going to let them in, those cool kids enjoy their first wedding anniversary. Wish them all happy. And yeah, I think that's about all we got for y'all. Keep on keeping on. Take care of yourselves. And we'll chat real soon.
Bye.